This is a special edition of Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Join us today as we pay tribute to a great American.
Those doing all the criticizing had their chance. In the 4 years before we got to Washington, they had it all. They had the whole enchilada. They controlled the presidency, the United States Senate, the House of Representatives, all the committees of Congress and the executive branch, and hundreds of agencies and departments. They virtually had a free hand, and all they could think to do with that free hand was stick it in your pocket.
Remember President Ronald Reagan today on Morning in America, where the most important voice is yours. Call us with your memories at 866-680-6464. Now, here's your host, Bill Bennett.
Good morning. It's Bill Bennett. I was Ronald Reagan's chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities and as Secretary of Education, served proudly under Ronald Reagan. He was my mentor. I'm in the studio here with Seth Leibson, associate producer and head of research. Seth, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
And Jeff Kreitz, our creative director, who did a nice mix on that lead-in. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, sir.
All right. It's a pleasure to be here. We're talking about Ronald Reagan with you. Our phone number is 866-680-6464. What's your favorite memory? Did you ever meet him? We've heard from a couple of people this morning who've met him, and it was a transforming moment. What was the greatest achievement? What's the legacy? What are the critics going to do to the legacy? What's going to happen when the MOPE gets a hold of them? The MOPE is my new, what do you call that, an acronym?
An acronym,
which is the Media Organized Professional Intellectual Group, MOPE. Anyway, they will try to disparage, for sure. Or, if not disparage Reagan, they will use a comparison to George Bush's disadvantage. They will say, well, Reagan might have had the big vision and the greatness, but George W. doesn't. They'll do something. They won't let us have our memory of Reagan, the clear evidence of his consequence. What is that? He ended the long twilight struggle against communism, essentially, with some hope from the some help from the Holy Father, the Pope, and Margaret Thatcher and his team and some other allies and Lech Walesa. The long twilight struggle was essentially concluded. So we welcome your thoughts and comments at 866-680-6464. Let me do that again. Since I flubbed it, 866-680-6464. We have a piece up on the website, Reader's Digest. I wrote it in September 1995, right shortly after the president wrote us that extraordinary letter about his Alzheimer's. And I was reminiscing, just to read you a little part. I'll never forget the day you phoned me when I was Secretary of Education. The call came in out of the blue. Hello, Bill, came the president's voice. You asked me if I knew a certain poem that paid tribute to teachers. No, Mr. President, I confessed. Well, let me get it to you, you answered. I thought you'd get some aid, Mr. President, to look it up, copy it, and fax it to my office. That's what I do. No, you, the President of the United States, wrote it out on longhand, from memory, on a yellow sheet of paper, and you sent it over as if you were a neighbor back in Dixon, eager to share something. What a guy, as we say, and indeed, what a guy. Seth?
Yeah, it was amazing watching all the tributes on TV. You were on TV a lot this weekend, and what I liked, you'll be on TV a lot and radio, other radio shows, I guess, a lot this week, too, as they talk about Ronald Reagan. Is that right?
My appearances on TV reminded you that I have, as has been aptly said, a face for radio, would you say?
No, I wouldn't have said that. But what you did say, and I didn't hear anyone else say it, which I thought was interesting, was a lot of the irony that surrounded Ronald Reagan. You pointed out that this man who was elected at the age of 69 made America feel, I think your phrase was, rejuvenated, young again.
Yeah, the oldest elected president. Is that right?
That's right.
At 69. His first and immediate effect was to make us all feel young and enthusiastic again. Absolutely.
And we needed it. You had also, we had heard in the clips that Jeff was playing as we introed about Ronald Reagan. He was talking about how they had their chance. The Democrats had their chance. They had the presidency, the House, the Senate. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have a guest, Vin Weber, former congressman from Minnesota, who was elected in 1980 with Ronald Reagan's substantial coattails. That was a huge election. I had forgotten. I was rereading how big that was. That election turned the Senate over to the Republicans and got rid of some tremendously well-known Democratic senators, from Birch Bayh to Frank Church to George McGovern, Warren Magnuson, who was the head of the Senate Appropriations.
Right.
That was a watershed election they took over.
We will talk about that with Vin. Let's remind him that that's what we want to talk to him about, the Reagan babies. Who were the Reagan babies, as they were called? My current colleague, of course, Jack Kemp, was a was instrumental in the tax cut, which was so important to Reagan. He was one of the leaders of those babies. Babies can have leaders. Okay, let's go to calls. Let's go to Mike. Where are you, Mike?
Olathe, Colorado.
Where?
Olathe, Colorado.
Where is Olathe?
Oh, it's about 20 minutes or 20 miles south of Grand Junction.
Oh, sure, sure. I know the area well. I always press people because of my interest in geography, and I'm always thinking of the children here. They need to know where places are, especially in the United States. Thanks, Mike. What do you got on your mind?
Well, I remember hearing President Reagan, who influenced my patriotism quite a bit when I was younger. He was just a great president, but he was comical in many different ways, how he brought up things. He was having a problem with the bureaucracy, and I remember him getting a letter from somebody who was talking about the Louisiana Purchase.
Yeah.
And he wrote, this guy wrote a letter to his congressman or to the person who's trying to tax him or whatever, told him that he got his land on account of, and he went all the way back down to Louisiana Purchase and all the way back down to Columbus. Do you know the details of that?
I do not. We'll take a look at it, but I do not. We'll see if we can find it for you.
But, may he rest in peace.
You betcha.
Great president. Hopefully we'll have another few of those coming down the pike.
You bet we will. Well, one of the reasons, thanks, Mike, very much, one of the reasons that Reagan mattered is that he has defined what it means to be a confident conservative. And, several generations of people look to Reagan for that kind of inspiration and for the identity, a political identity. Let's go to Eric in Sanderson, Texas. Eric, good morning. You're on Morning in America.
Oh, hey, Bill. Great to talk to you. I love your show. Listen to it every morning. It's time I get up.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say I was an Army brat under Carter and then under Reagan, and you know, we were in Germany. That's where I met my wife, and she's actually from France, believe it or not. But
that's okay.
It was just night and day. I mean, we got a new bus to run track, and just
yep.
I mean, the mess halls, everything just improved so much. You know, my dad was he was in the Army for 30 years, fought in 3 wars, and then he was also a civil service for 15 years.
Great.
And we were everywhere. And I met my wife under him, and my first kid was born when he was leaving the presidency. And it's just,
you know,
what a great man. And I just tell my kids, you know, this is the reason why we're still here.
You betcha.
Because I feel that my dad worked on missiles in White Sands, and he's got some stories. He says that, you know, if it wasn't for Reagan, he feels that Russia would have took us.
Yeah, I think your dad's right.
And, well, he helped develop the cruise. And the Patriot, and a lot of the missiles that they're using right now.
Your dad, or Ronald Reagan, or both?
My dad. Well,
good.
Ronald Reagan too. but he was a German scientist. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he was a German scientist from White Sands. And
wasn't Willy von Braun? Was it? Your father wasn't Willy von Braun, was he?
No.
Okay.
Klaus.
Okay.
But what do you call it? We were in Pensacola. We were a lot of Navy bases. We were at Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Eric.
Great memories, man, about the great man. He'll live on forever.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Eric. Thanks for checking in with us. Let's go quickly to Carol in Bainbridge Island, Washington. Carol, you got about 40 seconds.
Okay. Ronald Reagan came along just at the right time. Jimmy Carter had instilled in us a look-ashamed attitude.
Mm-hmm. Hangdog. Mm-hmm.
It was like he was heaven sent. He was needed just at the right time, and he made us feel like Americans again.
That's right. Maybe he was heaven sent. You considered that possibility?
The timing was so good.
Yeah. No, he was great. He was a lift. He was, when we say a breath of fresh air, he really was, wasn't he?
Yes.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks for checking in. Folks, we got a lot more folks on the line, a lot more people calling in. You get in line because we want to hear you. This is a way to register your sentiment about Ronald Reagan, his legacy, the future of that legacy. 866-680-6464. The show is called Morning in America. We didn't call it just that today. It's always been Morning in America, and it always will be Morning in America. Come back.
We're your first stop every weekday morning. You're tuned to Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
I'm told you're on your way to a barbecue. That sounds like fun. So I don't want to hold you up. But again, let me wish you all the best of luck on Wednesday. And remember, I before E, except after C. That ought to help a little. You know, I have to tell you one story. People can get so sure of themselves. I know you must have heard or read in your studies about the author of many years ago, Mark Twain. And Mark Twain was on a ship going across to Europe. And in the dining salon that night at dinner, someone wanting to impress him at the table asked him to pass the sugar and then said, "Mr. Twain, don't you think it's unusual that sugar is the only word in our language in which S-U has the sh sound?" And Mark Twain said, "Are you sure?"
Just fine, and everything's gonna be all right. It's been all wrong, 'cause I can see the light of a clear blue morning.
There you go. That's a nice montage there, Mr. Kreitz. There's President Reagan talking to some school children, telling him a Mark Twain story, followed by Dolly Parton, isn't it? Light of a Clear Blue Morning. Very nice. We'll want to hear that music again, I think, this week. That's uplift music. Good sentiment by a great singer and a great talent. I before E, except after C, or when it sounds like A in neighbor or freight? I can't remember. Somebody help me. Way? Wait a minute. Way. Or it sounds like A as in help me here. What is it? As neighbor and way, are you sure? But if also freight. Am I wrong? Am I making this up? Or the, I mean, are how many exceptions are? All right, never mind. It's the former Secretary of Education getting obsessed here. It was back in that spelling bee. But there was that Reagan, wonderful Reagan wit and humor, and that great touch with children. He and I went on the road several times to talk to kids. I'll have some stories about that when you want to hear them. But right now, you are weighing in. Our toll-free number is 866-680-6464. And let's go to Jenna in Denton, Texas. Jenna, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to... Sorry if I get a little teary.
That's all right. Are you Jenna Bush, by the way?
No, Jenna Morris.
Okay, Jenna, go ahead.
Growing up in Akron, Ohio, I watched our president on the television, and I remember thinking in third and fourth grade how very, very lucky we were to mm-hmm. have him as a president. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him as a father figure. I had a wonderful father myself, but I just loved him. And when he wasn't president anymore, I remember going through a bit of turmoil and stress. He was the only president I ever knew. And when he left, I remember thinking, there's going to be no one like him ever again. And it was very, very frustrating for me to see other presidents come and go. And I just remember thinking, even to this day, he has always been my favorite president. And I felt very safe and very comfortable with him, even as a child. And I remember thinking, wow, ironically now I feel that way somewhat with the president we have now.
Yeah.
But President Reagan will always okay. be a wonderful president to me.
Wonderful. Jenna, beautiful statement. We're going to save that one for the archive. We'll get your permission before we play it again, but we're going to save that one for the archive. Thanks, Jenna. Listen, I felt the same way. My wife said, Elaine said to me on Saturday night, I guess, when we were talking about this, so we got the news. She said, he was a father figure to you, wasn't he? And I guess as close to as anybody. My parents were divorced when I was five, and I knew my father, but it was a kind of distant thing. And saw him on weekends, that sort of thing. But Ronald Reagan was certainly a very, very large figure in my life. I used to say I was the biggest, youngest, and most rumpled member of the cabinet. When I went into the cabinet in 1985, I was 42. And I was the only person entering the cabinet who got a pay raise. All these guys from industry and stuff were complaining about the pay cuts they took to go into government. I said, I got a raise. I was in teaching. But a lot of reasons I looked up to him as a kind of a father figure, and I don't mind saying so. And so, Jen, I know what you're talking about. But there will be someone like him. It's America. It is morning in America. And in some ways, it's always morning in America. And Ronald Reagan would want us to believe there will always be someone like him, someone maybe even better. Well, when Lincoln left, a lot of people probably thought we'll never see his like again. Well, we saw his 20th century version, I think, in Ronald Reagan. Okay, folks, we will be back.
You're tuned to Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Big views on the news and headline-making guests. Coast to coast every weekday morning. This is a special edition of Morning in America. Stay with us as we pay tribute to a great American.
You know, the other day I was on a campus, a college up in Ohio, and I was taking some questions from the students, and one of them said to me, "What do you want the American people to remember most about your presidency?" Well, I hope they won't have to be remembering soon, but I was taken aback. It's the kind of question you don't often hear, and you're a little surprised you haven't thought about it. And then I said that I just felt if they'd remember that I gave the government back to the people.
Remember President Ronald Reagan. Today on Morning in America, here's your host, former chairman of the National Endowment for the Humanities and Secretary of Education under President Reagan, Bill Bennett.
I guess we're all burnishing our credentials, our Reagan credentials a little bit, but I do so with pride. It's Monday, June 7th, 2004, where we are remembering Ronald Reagan and talking about his legacy and how we can carry it forward into the future. I now have one of the most distinguished Reagan babies with me, Vin Weber, who came to Congress in 1980. He was congressman from Minnesota, class of 80, and chairman of the National Endowment for Democracy. Good morning, Vin.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me on this morning. A sad morning, but also sort of a great time to re-inspire ourselves with Ronald Reagan.
I keep trying to be sad, but I can't. I mean, the passing is there, but in some sense, Vin, I feel he left us 10 years ago, and that's what he meant in that letter is, you know, I'm going, move on. And emotionally, I felt it this weekend, and, you know, I think everybody in the family did, but there's so much to remember that's so encouraging, it's hard to be down, isn't
it? Yeah, I think it is, and I've watched television, listened to the radio, and listened to some of the speeches they're replaying and things like that, and it's a triumphant day in a way, because all sorts of people that may have argued with Ronald Reagan when he was president are now acknowledging the tremendous, tremendous leadership and contribution that this man made to the history of our country and the world.
Yeah, well, some of them will change in 48 hours.
Yeah.
You know that.
We know that well.
Yeah, we know the turn. I'm waiting for it to turn. Tell us about the Reagan babies, if you don't mind me calling that, class of 80.
I don't mind that a bit. I've always said I probably wouldn't have run for office if it hadn't been for Ronald Reagan, but I surely wouldn't have won if it hadn't been for Ronald Reagan.
Right.
I ran in 1980 at the same time that Governor Reagan, of course, was in his first run for the presidency. And what I remember so much about it was and younger people under the age of, say, 35, have a hard time imagining how really depressed the country was. I don't mean in the sense of a Great Depression depressed, but there was no sense of optimism about our future. We had double-digit inflation, double-digit unemployment, gas lines. And the worst thing was the sense emanating from the Carter administration was, we just have to live with this. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yep, hang dog.
And then the Soviets in Afghanistan and, you know, prisoners in Iran, nothing we could do about it. And along came Reagan, and Reagan basically said America can solve all these problems.
Yeah.
And it allowed those of us that were running, as you call them, the Reagan babies, to really be the optimistic, positive candidates in that election of 1980, and it may have been the first time that people of, quote, a conservative philosophical persuasion had the upper hand on optimism and a positive agenda for the future, because we really believe we could solve those problems.
We're talking to Vin Weber, a former 12-year congressman from Minnesota, a Reagan baby, one of the leaders of the Reagan babies. I'll tell you why, because I've heard he can deny it, but people said, well, Gingrich leads, but the person he listens to most closely is Vin Weber. So the man who whispered in Newt Gingrich's ear during those years. Tell us about that class. Who was in that class of 80, and what kind of energy and spark was animating that class?
Well, a lot of them are gone now. Hank Brown from Colorado went on to become senator from Colorado, then president of the University of Colorado. He was the president of our class. And Tom Hartnett from South Carolina went back to South Carolina. But there, Judd Gregg, senator from New Hampshire, was a member of our class. Larry Craig, senator from Idaho, was a member of our class. There were 40-some or more, and we really came to Washington determined that we were going to change things, not just to sort of fit in and try to move our way up the seniority ladder. We were compared sort of as the flip side of the coin to the Democrat Watergate babies of the 1974 election, who had come in determined that they were going to change the old Democratic Party and move it to the left, really, and we were determined we were going to change the Republican Party. I would not say quite so much in a strict ideological sense, although we were all conservatives, but more from a sense of believing that we had an obligation to try to become the majority.
And
that's what we thought the existing establishment in the Congress didn't believe.
But you guys reminded me, analogous, not a direct comparison, to the founders, okay? A little bit, Vin. I don't want to get a big head here. But, I mean, you were the young men. I remember a great essay on the founders called The Young Men of the Revolution. And you were young guys.
Yeah.
And there was just a lot of energy. And it was, you know Bennett's axiom on Washington, you're either on offense or on defense.
Yep,
you guys were on offense. You were proposing all sorts of things. Tell us some of the things you were proposing, you know, with the leadership of Ronald Reagan.
Oh, well, we believed that we had to not just win elections. We believed we had to completely dominate the agenda. And Ronald Reagan, of course, had a tax-cutting agenda to restore the economy and a military buildup to confront the Soviet Union. But we believe we had to go further than that. An issue that you care a lot about is education. We believe that there had to be an educational choice agenda because we could not cede education to the liberals. We believe that we had to have an inner-city poverty agenda, urban enterprise zones and other proposals to try to revitalize the inner city, private housing vouchers to replace the old dinosaurs of public housing buildings. We just believed that at every stage there needed to be an agenda based on conservative values and free market principles that could compete in the marketplace of ideas with the liberal agenda.
How about our mutual friend and the taxes?
Pardon me?
How about our mutual friend in taxes, Mr. Kemp?
Oh, well, Jack Kemp, I think, was hugely important to the Reagan Revolution. I mean, he embodied the spirit of Ronald Reagan probably better than anybody in the Congress. I mean, as you know well, almost to a fault, he was a positive, optimistic, we can solve all these problems kind of guy, and didn't want to ever cede the field to kind of a consensus liberalism. And his the tax cut that passed, even though it was actually the Conable-Hance tax bill, because those were the guys on the committee, is still to this day known as Kemp-Roth.
Kemp-Roth, yeah.
Because Jack Kemp spent years doing the most important thing, which is not writing it in committee, but writing it out in the countryside and getting the country behind this notion that lower tax rates are the key to an entrepreneurial society and economic growth.
Yep. We've got calls, Vin, and partly in response here to your comments. Will you join us with a caller or two?
Sure. Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Boyd in Philadelphia. Boyd, you're on with me and Vin Weber.
Morning, Bill. Good morning, Mr. Weber.
Morning, Boyd.
Bill, I couldn't. I've got like a twofold comment this morning, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And I couldn't. I would be wrong by starting with nothing less than honoring President Reagan, even in his death. I'm a 29-year-old, American at heart and Philadelphian by geography, and I can't. Like you gentlemen are very well in tune with what he did politically as well. I am to a point. I just know that from the time I was 6 years old till I was 14, he's all I knew. And he was an extremely good impact and honorable impact on my life because he unified this country like I have never seen in my lifetime.
Tremendous, tremendous.
And I wanted to honor him in saying that. second fold, if you don't mind. I have some severe discontent with the newspapers in the Philadelphia region today because of how they dishonored, I believe, President Reagan by, and I don't know if this was the same, this has been the same across the United States, but in Philadelphia, the big Smarty Jones rave, I was very in tune with the whole Smarty Jones, you know, legacy building up. But yesterday, the Philadelphia Inquirer just disgraced President Reagan by making him kind of sub-headlines literally below Smarty Jones.
You can't be telling the truth. You can't be telling the truth.
Absolutely. The Philadelphia
the
Inquirer.
The Sunday paper?
The Philadelphia Inquirer Sunday paper, from the top of the newspaper, about a third of the way down was nothing but Smarty Jones, and then in font that was probably 10 to 15 times smaller was former President Ronald Reagan died in 93.
I don't mean to be laughing, but horse loses, former President Reagan dies.
Who's the editor that made that judgment? Gee, yeah,
my gosh! All right, Boyd. Well, this
and I won't buy another Philadelphia Inquirer for as long as I live. Right. And I make that pledge here. And I want to
okay.
Cast the first vote for President Reagan on Mount Rushmore. God bless America.
Thank you very much. That's remarkable. I was struck, Vin, by the media yesterday celebrating the memory of Ronald Reagan. Two comments. First of all, some of the celebration was for Reagan. I didn't know it was this great communicator and the guy, the genial and great communicator, but not the man of substance. They're missing this thing about the substance. Wall Street Journal this morning says that, you know, another irony about Ronald Reagan is, you know, he wasn't acting. He was serious.
Yeah,
this was the actor who was dead serious.
Well, I think if I you said some nice things about me, let me throw you into some pretty nice company. I always tell people that Ronald Reagan had more intellectual firepower in his administration than any other president in my lifetime. People like Bill Bennett, mutual friend Michael Novak up at the UN Commission on Human Rights, our friend Dr. Gene Kirkpatrick at the United Nations. I mean, George Shultz. This was a man who was comfortable with intellectual firepower all around him, and who was comfortable with powerful ideas.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, again, yesterday the media talking about how much they liked him and admired him. I heard people saying things, and I remember, you know, I take names, like Mrs. Bennett. She remembers, you know how a wife remembers something you said 17 years ago? You know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I remember she said, when the cicadas were back last time, that's when you said that. Anyway, I remember some of these people, and yesterday they were just, you know, just, oh, my gosh, how much they loved Ronald Reagan. I've got the quotes here, folks, of what they said during the time. The Evil Empire speech, they hated the Evil Empire speech.
Absolutely. I was talking on a Minnesota radio program yesterday, and we talked about how hard we had to work to get the Reagan agenda through the House of Representatives because the Democrats still controlled it. And I'd been seeing yesterday all these comments about how, Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan got along so well. Tip O'Neill was a vicious opponent of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember one comment that particularly annoyed me. Before. He said Reagan should leave the presidency, go back to California, and his wife can be the queen of Beverly Hills. They were not quite as kind to him in those days as they'd like us all to think they are today.
All the bedtime for Bonzo stuff.
Yeah, all that.
I know. All right, Vin, you are great to join us. I know you're much in demand today. Thanks very much.
Great to be with you, Bill.
Okay, it's Vin Weber, chairman of the National Endowment for the Democracy, one of the Reagan babies, one of the guys who will carry this legacy on, I guarantee you that. Folks, we got a lot of calls, a lot of beautiful sentiments out there, beautiful and true. Call us, 866-680-6464. It is morning in America. Familiar phrase. We hope it's a familiar phrase. Came from Ronald Reagan, and we're carrying it forward.
You're going to be submerged with demagoguery about the 83 budget, which just was sent up to the Hill to Congress today. Demagoguery. The columnist and journalist Burnham once said that when even the most skillful surgeon operates on a Democratic politician, he cannot separate demagogic from solid tissue without causing the death of the patient.
There it is. There's that humor. Steel and humor. That's it. Steel inside and humor outside. I'll tell you, I bumped into it at a cabinet meeting once. I thought it was a pillar. I thought it was part of the wall, and it was Ronald Reagan, like a big oak tree. It's Morning in America. I'm Bill Bennett. We're remembering Ronald Reagan. We're talking about his legacy, talking about the past and the future, his impact on American life, one of the great presidents of American history. We were talking to Vin Weber in the last few minutes, so let us go to our calls because you all have been waiting patiently. Doug in Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Doug. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. Over the weekend, I was watching Fox News, and I saw Bill Kristol tell a story about you and Reagan. I thought you could comment on it. He talked about that Reagan would, while he was a big-picture kind of guy, would occasionally cut out magazine articles, newspaper articles, and send them to, you know, the different people and the different cabinet heads and say, hey, could you look into this? And then what he was talking about was there was some sex education class that had been paid for, five times removed of federal money. And he said, hey, you know, what about this? Can you look into this?
You bet. Thanks, Doug. Thanks for the call. You're absolutely right. He used to do it all the time. So, you know, you needed to be at your desk because the boss was always, you know, not too far away. He called me on that. We looked into it and actually found out and embarrassed the people. We didn't have to cut them off. They dropped the funding. And that led to a large revision in federal policy on sex education. You know, now under George Bush, it's going the other way. The sex education money, if there is some, is available for the teaching of abstinence. Which is what most parents want taught to their young children, heaven knows. But the president used to do that a lot. I remember he read something in Reader's Digest about a child who was misdiagnosed in special ed, and he asked me to look into that. We looked into that. You know, he thought the government ought to be on the side of the people and that we should be a kind of ombudsman for the people. And so he called me. I remember he, an extraordinary thing, he asked me to do. Or he did for me. He asked me if I knew this. We were talking in the White House, and he said, do you know this great poem called Teacher? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, let me get it to you. Well, he didn't Xerox it. He wrote it out in longhand, Doug, and put it on yellow sheet and sent it to me, and I save it, of course, to this day. The funniest call I got on this, though, was remembering this last night, talking to my wife about it. We had a luncheon at the White House for some of my favorite educators. One of them was named Jaime Escalante. He was the great educator from Garfield High School in L.A. who lifted these kids into calculus. A wonderful story. There's a movie made about him called Stand and Deliver. Edward James Olmos played Escalante. Anyway, we had Escalante to the White House with several other educators whom I had met on the road. And when Escalante was on his way, he called me and he said, may I bring a book for the president? And I said, well, what is it, Jaime? He said, it's my calculus book. And I thought, I guess so. You know, it's not really summer reading or relaxing reading for a president. But I said, sure, bring the calculus book. So he came, he sat next to the president. They had a great time together. And president asked him to stay for a state dinner. He said, no, I can't. I have to get back to my students. And President Reagan admired that. Well, he gave him the calculus book, and that was all I thought about it. And then about a week later, I got a call from the secretary saying, Mr. Bennett, Mr. Secretary, if you're not too busy, the president would like to speak with you. I said, never too busy. And I picked up the phone, and President Reagan said, Bill, I don't do a great Reagan imitation, but you get the idea. Bill, I wonder if I could interrupt you and ask you a question. I said, sure, Mr. President. He said, well, you know our friend Mr. Escalante, the math teacher? I said, yes. He said, well, he left me a book, this book on calculus. I said, yes, sir. He said, well, I'm reading it, and I just need some help, and maybe you could come by and help me. I said, well, sure, Mr. President, I'll come right up. He said, no, just, you know, when you're in the neighborhood, that's fine. I said, I'm glad to come. He said, no, he said, I'm reading it, and this calculus book, and I'm not sure I'm holding it right side up. This was the humor. You know, he has time in his day while he is staring down the Soviet Union. He has time in the day to call and just you know, a lighthearted moment. All business and a sweetheart. Anyway, our president, Ronald Reagan, he's gone, but boy, is he not forgotten. And he won't be forgotten here on a show that's named after him, Morning in America. Toll free, 866-680-6464. You come back.
Breaking news.
Sizzling talk from politics to sports and entertainment.
You're tuned to Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Hi, I'm Glenn Fradenberg, CEO of BeSafe Online. Did you know that 1 in 4 internet users visited a porn site last month? Did you also know there is more profit each year from pornography than from the NFL, the NBA, and Major League Baseball combined? Did you know that it is estimated that 1 in 2 church-attending men have recently visited an online porn site? This is according to Whistleblower Magazine, a publication of WorldNet Daily. Friends, are you ready to admit that we have a problem? And are you ready to do something about it to protect your children, yourself, and your loved ones? At Be Safe Online, we offer a low-cost solution that does not slow down your computer and costs just a little over $4 a month. Our solution can be trusted. It's easy to use because you don't have to change your current internet provider.
Visit BeSafeFilter.com. That's the letter B, SafeFilter.com. BeSafeFilter.com.
Finally, there's a new science to weight loss.
I'm Dr. Greg Cinnamone, and those words sparked a very skeptical TV news person to put Cortislim to the ultimate test. She was doing a news story and wanted more than success stories in an interview with Dr. Talbot. This TV news person decided she'd wait to write her story until testing Cortislim herself. After all, she had a few pounds to lose, so if it worked, great. If it didn't, oh well, great story. Everyone except Dr. Talbot seemed just a little nervous because weight loss results vary so much. What if she didn't eat sensibly or exercise? Or worse, what if she sat around and ate everything within arm's length and actually gained weight? Long story short, she triumphantly announced she'd lost 18 pounds. Well, actually 18 pounds and still losing. And now it seems her TV colleagues are asking her about that new science in weight loss. What was it called? Cortislim. Call 1-800-540-LEAN. 800-540-LEAN. 800-540-LEAN.
You're listening to Bill Bennett's Morning in America.